Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music on the air and in your ear. And once again, I'm Martin, and joined by the king of the casters, as always, Mr. Brett Podcast. And today, Brett, we have a legendary singer-songwriter from Canada that I am very much looking forward to talk to. Why don't you introduce today's guest?
Absolutely. You know, we've had Canadian treasures on before, but this time, you're right, it is a Canadian legend. We are very honored to speak about her latest album at the end of the day. We have Sylvia Tyson on the show. Sylvia, how are you?
I'm very fine. I'm fine. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Brett.
Well, and it's wonderful to have you on the show. I mean, we've been listening to you for many, many years, and it is an honor. So let's talk about At the End of the Day. I mean, you say that this is going to be your last album. You know, you sure you don't have another one in you?
Well, probably not. This album is made up of songs that I had written that had never been recorded. And I thought it was high time to record them. But I don't have a lot of new songs in the pipeline right now.
So then when it comes down to you know, your writing process, like, how has that changed over the years, like, especially in the early days with Ian? Like, and then when you became a solo artist, like, how did your songwriting process change?
Well, I think any songwriter will tell you that the first song or two are really easy. They sort of write themselves. And then you become more discriminating as you get more experience and you get a little older. And I think your subject matter changes too, although I've always been a storyteller. So most of my songs have a story to them. And that's the thing I've always followed.
So you talk about these songs, of course, being, you know, older songs. Like, what? How old is the oldest song?
The oldest song in the album is probably about 15 years old, but some of them are newer. I've worked with quartet, of course, for 20 years, and we were all four of us are songwriters, and so we always submitted songs to quartet for recording. But all of us had songs turned down by quartet as well, not because they weren't good songs, but because they didn't work for the group. So that's the category that some of these songs fit into.
Now, in this case, I mean, this is your seventh nomination for a Juno Award and for the Best Roots album. And now you've never won before. How do you feel about this time?
Well, I'm very excited at the prospect and very pleased that they decided to nominate me. I'm up against some fairly stiff competition, of course, but that's always the case. So it's luck of the draw, really.
I mean, you're a member of the Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame, the Order of Canada, the Songwriters Hall of Fame. I mean, as a career, how do you feel? I mean, this is amazing. Like, how do you feel about your career?
I'm very happy with my career. I guess, well, this is going to sound kind of weird, but I guess I've gotten to be a brat for most of my career, being that I've never been forced into anything. I've never had to do anything that I didn't want to do. And I've been very lucky in that respect. So I've always just charted my own course.
So then are there things that I guess you wish that you could have added on to your career?
I suppose everybody has things that they wish had been part of their psyche, part of their life. The ones that I wish for probably had nothing to do with music. I'm very satisfied with my music career. If I had a wish, it would have been to have the physical ability of maybe a dancer or an athlete, but that's never going to happen at this age.
Yeah, I guess when you think of somebody like Mick Jagger, who's still, I mean, who's in his 80s and you know, trains like a crazy person to get up on stage. I mean the combination there, that is pretty amazing.
Yes, although we don't want to see him naked anymore.
That's for sure. I guess some of us probably never wanted to see that in the first place. But, So what's it like then, you know, I mean, when you think about being a Canadian artist, and what's it like, the music industry like in Canada?
Well, it's changed a lot, and I'm kind of out of it right now. I'm not really active in it. It used to be record labels had a big part of one's building one's career and one's success. And it was like back in the 60s and 70s, you had a chance at recording probably three albums before they decided whether you were worth keeping signed on or not. Now it's almost like you get to record one song, and if they don't like it, you're over as far as they're concerned. So I think it's much harder for young artists now than it was, although they do have access to a lot of online opportunities for reaching an audience, which I didn't have when I started out.
Do you think that if you started your career now, like the, you know, and things would be different, do you think that you would have been able to grow in the same way? Or is the fact that, you know, you came out and you did it the way you did, you know, probably the reason that you were successful?
I think that everything unfolded as it was supposed to. I think that audiences were more open to my kind of music when I was starting out and getting along with it. I don't know if there's as much interest in what I do right now as there was, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
I mean, it's interesting because
the album does. No, go ahead. It's just the album presents some of your best music. So the idea that you're not feeling as, accepted or by the, I think that you're doing some of your best work right now.
Well, personally, I feel this is probably the best album I've ever done. So I agree with you in that respect. And certainly we've had some success with it. I mean, it reached number one and number two in the Americana format in the States, which is kind of unheard of. And I was very happy with that. So I've been delighted with the response to this album, but it was unexpected for me.
Yeah, that
two of the best, my favorite songs on At the End of the Day are Now Tell Me That You Got the Blues and Generous Heart. I wonder if you talk to me a little bit about those two, what they kind of how they came together.
Well, Now Tell Me That You've Got the Blues is very definitely tongue in cheek, and it's meant to be funny, it's sort of managing, thinking of billing up to the bar with somebody who ends up buying all your drinks because you haven't got a cent to your name. That's kind of the idea of that song. Generous Heart I wrote with the late, great Shirley Eichardt. And I was both pleased and saddened that I got to call her before I recorded the song to tell her that I was recording it, because we'd written it quite some time ago. And heard the bad news, you know, that she had a brain tumor and that she was not going to last very long. So it's bittersweet, that song, for me.
Yeah. Do you have a preference on like collaborating someone versus writing a song alone?
I very much like both, but I will say that writing with someone else, you always turn out something that you wouldn't turn out by yourself. There's always a different element. And so that's always quite exciting. But, the process of writing and writing doesn't come easily to me. Lyrics are easier for me than melodies. I know I can write good melodies, but they are harder for me than the words. And I guess my interest with words really goes back to all of my interest in English literature when I was in high school and after that. I just have a romance with words, really.
Well, and I think
that's your favorite novels then.
Oh, well, I like the classics. Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice, Oh, let me see now. I like the travel books of Bruce Chatwin very much. He's a wonderful writer. I'm a constant reader, so it's very hard for me to say what are my favorites.
There was something about the language and the way it was used, though, in those classics that's just different. It's the flow and the beauty of it.
Yes, well, my novel, Joyner's Dream, started in the late 1700s and came up to the present day. So I had to be very careful in my use of language in the early chapters to make sure that it really jived with the period I was writing about.
Now, is that something that you would consider going back to, is like writing another novel at this stage in your life?
I don't know about writing another novel. I have written a series of three murder mysteries, which are contemporary. They haven't been published as yet, but so if you know any publishers that might be interested, let me know.
No, probably not. We only do comic books, so that's a little
bit. I see. Well, that's kind of out of my wheelhouse.
So then, you know, I mean, overall in your career, like when you look at like the writing and stuff, and I know for a fact that that's what drew Mont and I into your life, you know, that storytelling, like I think about, you know, labels that they put on it. I mean, you get labeled originally with Ian as folk music and then it's country music. Like, what's kind of the difference between folk and country, you know, in your case? Is there one?
Well, the definition of folk music has always been, for me, traditional music, songs that go back so far that they have no idea who wrote them. Certainly that definition has broadened over time. I come from Chatham, Ontario, originally, and the Chatham radio station, when I was growing up, played country all the time. So I certainly grew up on that, you know, Kitty Wells and Patsy Cline, people like that. Everything that I have ever read or heard has influenced my music. Not that I copy, but that it kind of triggers something in my creative mind.
Do you listen to any current musicians? And if so, who is it that has your ear?
I occasionally hear something that knocks my socks off, but not as much recently, mainly because I'm not really listening a lot to contemporary music. I more often listen to classical music, which I find I can listen to without it sort of intruding on my creative mind.
Now, do you still play instruments today? Like, do you find yourself just kind of sitting back and like picking up a guitar or like sitting at the piano?
I'm not playing as much as I used to. I mean, I'm 84 years old, and the romance of the road is gone for me. So I really don't sort of sit around and play the guitar and dream up lyrics as much now as I did when I was younger. Occasionally something will occur to me, and as every songwriter knows, if you don't write it down immediately, you'll lose it for sure. Or someone else will write it. Yes. That's just the facts of life.
Yeah, once it goes into that collective unconscious, then you've probably lost it for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, years ago, I co-wrote or co-edited a book with Tom Russell on songwriters called "And That I Wrote, The Songwriter Speaks." And in it, the various songwriters, going right back to Stephen Foster, talk about songs being in the air, and sky songs, these songs that sort of fall out of the sky somehow. I think that all writers are aware of that.
Yeah, for sure. You're right, that the creativity is already existing, and in many ways it's just certain people have the ability to channel. And
and if you don't write it, somebody else will. That's always the way it goes.
How many times has that happened to you, where you've gotten something in your head, and then you've kind of found the song that you felt like was in your head?
Yes, and either that or somebody wrote it better.
Yes, well, I can believe that. That would be. Who are the songwriters then that you think like are truly spectacular?
Oh, well, Gordon Lightfoot, of course. Mm. I was privileged to perform at the memorial for Gordon Lightfoot at Massey Hall. As a matter of fact, that was the last time I performed live. So I definitely have to say Gordon. Oh, gosh, there are so many. I hardly know where to begin. I'd have to go through my record collection to tell you. I mean, John Prine would be one, of course. Chris Christopherson. There's just too many to mention.
Now, is that the way that you listen to music is on vinyl?
Is which?
Do you listen to music on vinyl? Is that kind of preferred, how do you listen to music nowadays?
Well, as I say, I mainly listen to classical music, which I have on either CD or vinyl. Mm. But I have a huge vinyl collection, but my turntable is pretty decrepit these days, so it tends to be CDs.
Yeah, because when you mentioned you wish? That.
Go ahead, Brett.
Oh, I was just thinking when you mentioned your record collection, I was just like, my gosh, I would love to see that.
Well, it's pretty extensive. It's certainly probably about 1,000 LPs.
Oh, my goodness. Is there anybody you wish you had collaborated with that you didn't get an opportunity to yet?
I don't think so. The collaboration is not something that I seek. It's just something that happens with people I know or people that I work with. You know, there are collaborations on the At the End of the Day album. Cindy Church, whom, of course, I worked with in Quartet, and Joan Besson, who was with Prairie Oyster for all those years. But Joan was in my band for many years, so we've remained close friends. And whenever I come up with a lyric that I can't think of a melody for, I always send it off to Joan.
Was it ever difficult to, you know, especially for this album, like, was it difficult to find people to work on it, or if you called, did they come?
You mean in the writing or in the performing?
Oh, just in performance.
Well, of course, Danny Greenspoon produced the album, and he chose an ensemble of amazing musicians that just fitted together beautifully and gave it a consistent sound, because the nature of the songs themselves are not necessarily consistent. But what Danny was able to do with the ensemble he created was to give me a cohesive sound.
Well, that is one of the things that I absolutely love about the album, is the fact that you can go from that, like, that roots, that Americana sound, to some blues and a little bit of jazz in there. So I love the fact that you were able to take these different musical styles and, you know, mesh them all together.
Yes, that's definitely part of the production magic. Danny, again, with Joan Besson, was in my band, The Great Speckled Bird, for several years. So he kind of knows how I think.
Yeah. Is there, like, how many, I guess, takes would it take you to sing these songs nowadays?
This last album, it didn't take that long, because the arrangements were all set. Danny had worked with musicians ahead of time to give them the treatment they deserved. And so all I had to do was to come in and sing. And basically it was, the vocals were live off the floor, with a few exceptions of little glitches that we overdubbed.
So then what is it that you look for? Like, when you go into a studio, like, what do you look for out of that studio?
It comes down to how easy it is to work in the space and with the people who are the crew in the space. And so certainly that was true of Canterbury Sound. I mean, it's really set up for the musician. And the thing is, I don't have a lot of technical knowledge of the recording process. And that's all taken care of for you. So I just have to come in and use my voice. It's perfect.
Yeah, I can well imagine. Do you have a favorite studio that you've worked in?
Well, there's been so many over the years, but I would say currently Canterbury would be my favorite because that last experience was so pleasant. I mean, I have been able to record in some pretty interesting studios. Ian and I got to record in the old RCA Victor studio that all the Presley ones were recorded in.
Wow.
And so that was pretty exciting. And, you know, we had some interesting players too. Jerry Reed played on one of those albums. And, you know, a lot of other wonderful players. It's been such a long career that trying to call it all to mind is kind of daunting.
I can well imagine.
I don't believe people nowadays understand just how brilliant Jerry Reed was.
Oh, he was wonderful. He was wonderful. The story I remember about Jerry Reed is that the producer we had when he was in the studio was from New York, and I don't know how familiar he was with Jerry or with the Nashville style of recording. Jerry had ripped off an incredible solo for one of the songs. I don't remember which one. And the producer said, "Oh, that was great, Jerry. Could you play that again?" And he said, "Play what?"
Oh, that is amazing. Yes, I'm sure that your life has been filled with those moments. That's for sure. And a brilliant career you've had, and a brilliant album to top it all off. So, Sylvia, thank you so much for being on the show. I just want to wish you nothing but the best, and for sure, you know, wish you luck with the Junos. And I really hope that this time is the charm.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Well, again, it's been our honor, and thank you so much, Sylvia Tyson. Amazing.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
At the end of the day, when the shadows grow longer, and now is pushed aside and the past grows stronger. When I think of the good times, all the hard times fall away. It's the good times I remember at the end of the day. Sunlight dancing on the water as we walked along the sand, two heartbeats joined together in the palms of our hands. All the times we laughed at nothing for the sheer joy of laughter that swelled like a choir and echoed in the rafters. When I think of the good times, all the hard times fall away. It's the good times I remember at the end of the day. Treasure that we had, but somehow we pulled together. Whenever things went bad, as I stopped to count my blessings, many more than I can tell, each one shines like a jewel and rings like a bell. When I think of the good times, all the hard times fall away, it's the good times I remember at the end of the day. So many things that could have changed us sent us on our separate ways. But here we are together at the end of the day.